Welcome to the Teach the Geek podcast, where engineer and author Neil Thompson talks with STEM professionals about public speaking, a struggle for many of us. Whether you're a novice public speaker or a proficient one, you can always pick up tips on how to improve. Here's your host, Neil Thompson.
Welcome to another edition of Teach the Geek Interviews. My name is Neil Thompson. I'm the founder of Teach the Geek. I work with technical professionals so they can present more effectively, especially in front of non-technical audiences. And you can learn more about that at teachthegeek.com. Again, that's teachthegeek.com. Today, my guest is Mariana Kinney. She works with managers so they can develop professional and personal goals. She's also a podcaster and author of the book, Might in Motion, Motivation, Momentum, Mindfulness, Might. So how did an industrial engineer come to this line of work? Let's find out. Welcome to Teach the Geek Interviews, Mariana.
Hi, Neil. Nice to meet you. And I'm so excited to be here.
Wonderful. And so, as I mentioned, you studied industrial engineering. So what was the motivation to study that?
That's a great question. I actually started off as a chemical engineering major, and I thought that would be a perfect fit because in high school, I loved chemistry and I loved calculus and all the maths. And then I showed up at Georgia Tech and did 2 years as a chemical engineering major and realized, I didn't really like it so much and actually changed my major. And I think that was the first step of saying, you know what, it's okay to change your mind. I moved over to industrial engineering, which actually fit my personality a lot better. I loved process improvement. I loved thinking about, you know, how systems are set up. And as an industrial engineer, you can do basically anything from working in a hospital and helping figure out how to move patients more effectively through a hospital to moving trucks in a network. And so I love the diversity of what you could do as an industrial engineer. So I made that switch. And I think that played in nicely to Might in Motion because it all works together. It's having systems in place to be able to be a better leader, a better manager of teams, and creating culture that you really want on your teams. And so it fits in nicely with being an industrial engineer because I love systems and I love kind of breaking things down and building them back up.
Okay. When you decided to make that switch from chemical to industrial, did you have to, getting the degree, did it have to take much longer or you were still able to finish within the required time or recommended time?
It finished within the required time, but I did do a lot of co-ops and internships. So instead of a 4-year plan, it was a 5-year plan. And I did that purposefully because I wanted to make sure I had career goals and things set up and actually had some experience, right? So, I mean, I spent time in paper mills. I spent time in manufacturing. I spent time working for a trucking company. I actually rode around with truck drivers doing time studies one summer, which was not the job my dad enjoyed me getting. He's like, you're going to do what? But it was awesome because it gave me some different perspectives of different industries, right? And so even though it extended me a year, the extension was more on the basis of the fact that I wanted to make sure I had relevant job experience.
All right. So now it comes time for you to get that first job. What kind of, I guess, criteria were you looking for in what that first job was going to give you?
Yes. So I had, because my background was in many cases with manufacturing, I thought that was the route I was going to go. In fact, everything I interviewed for and job offers were all in manufacturing, except for one, and that was in consulting. And if you've spoken to any industrial engineers, most of us end up in consulting at some point in time. And this one really spoke to me. It was working in warehouses and helping drive process improvement for picking product and shipping it out directly to customers. And so I went after that opportunity. It allowed me to be able to be in different cities and different parts of the country, mainly in the Southeast, but being in different warehousing situations was really cool and exciting for me at the time. And I spent 2.5 years with that company, which was great. It was a great start to my career.
Nice. During your working career, have you ever managed people?
Yes, lots of people.
Oh, okay. So when it comes to managing people, what would you say was something that you didn't anticipate?
Oh, It's hard. And there's a lot of HR aspects to it that I think as a new manager, you forget. You don't really realize that there's that person aspect. You're still in that mindset of individual contributor. So when you move from being, especially as an engineer, as an individual contributor role, you're known for, hey, I can code this, or I can break down this process from a chemical perspective, or whatever your job is, right? And then all of a sudden now you're dealing with people. You can't always break them down into these logical parts, right? Because we're illogical as people. And so that was probably the biggest thing, is trying to figure out how to tap in to allow those people to really rise up. And the big thing for me was really leaning into being a servant leader. So instead of being this uber individual contributor of, hey, everybody, you have to be cut just like me and think just like me and do just like me, it's how can I lean into what their skills are, what they bring to the table, so that we can all rise up.
When it came to you even becoming a manager of people, is that something you aspired to do, or is that something that kind of just happened along the way?
I had always aspired to do it, and I had had the privilege of many roles where I was an indirect leader, if that makes sense, right? Where you're having to lead without authority and try to negotiate with people to get them to do what you want. I really aspired to say, okay, oh, I'd love to have that where I have a team where they have to do what I want, right? And that was the big shift for me, is realizing you can't lead a team that way. You still have to have that influence, so that they want to follow you, not because they have to, but because they desire to.
All right. So for the people who are listening or watching our conversation and they aspire to be managers of people at some point, what are some pointers that you could give them?
The first thing is listen, right? And I know that sounds so simple, but God gave us 2 ears and one mouth. So keep your mouth shut for a little bit and listen. Listen to your team. Right. And then the second is create a space for them to be able to bring their whole self to the team. Right. So I like to the thought of chaos to community. There's been so many teams that I've inherited, right? I didn't build them from the ground up, and they're in a state of chaos, right? They've just lost a leader that maybe they knew or trusted or loved. Now they have a new one. They don't know you, right? You're having to get to know them. So there's this chaos aspect. But when you can start leaning into that and show them consistency and how you listen to them, how you maybe take their advice, or how you push back, because as a leader, there are times where you have to say, no, this is what we're doing, but there's a graceful way to do that. When you show that consistency, now all of a sudden you can create this community within your team, right? And that's something that I think if you can really hone in on as quickly as possible, it's great. So that first one is listen. Make sure you're listening to what skills they have, what their ideas and thoughts. And the second is really be able to lean in so you can create that community aspect.
All right. I mentioned in the intro that you work with corporate managers. Well, I suppose what was the motivation for you to start that work?
Because so many in corporate America, they rise up to because of what they've done individually, right? And so sometimes that transition can be really hard to move from that individual to, now I'm a leader and I can't do everything myself, right? And we don't always have those tools in place, the training in place to be able to help people make that transition. And so I wanted to create, and the whole Might in Motion thought process and the podcast to help those rising leaders have another way and avenue to learn, right? I mean, I've had the privilege to learn from some really great folks. I've had great bosses. I've had great mentors. And I just want to be able to pass that on and help others create their own legacy of being really great leaders.
All right. Yeah, that's I've never been a manager of people myself, mainly because I don't want to deal with people's neuroses. But I certainly can see the difficulty in making that transition from individual contributor, where you're only responsible for yourself, to manager of people, or where you're responsible for others. And hey, kudos to people like you who are willing to take on those roles, because I certainly wasn't one of those people.
And
So
that's okay, right? Like, I think everybody finds what they're really good at and their niche and lean into that, right? that's a absolutely 100% okay for those folks that want to be individual contributors.
Yeah, for sure. I mean, you mentioned your podcast. So what is your podcast about, and what do you hope people take away from it?
Oh, thanks for asking me. It has definitely been a really fun, exciting journey for me over the past year to launch the podcast. And we're now recording season three, which is super exciting. So the Might in Motion podcast is all about those four pillars of what's your motivation. So what goals are you trying to go after? How do you maintain momentum on those goals? How do you have a mindfulness aspect? So it's that whole, like, what's your intention, your thought process that you're bringing to the table? And then your might is your physical, right? So if you're falling down in any one of those four pillars, and I liken them to legs on a stool, if you've got them all pretty even, you've got a pretty steady seat at the table, right? Especially in corporate America, seat at the table is something everybody knows, right? They all want to have a seat there. But if one or more of those start getting out of whack, then you don't have any real stability underneath you, right? So I love talking to entrepreneurs, to doctors, to leaders within corporate America space, CEOs of startups, all kinds of individuals to bring that well-rounded thought process to the audience. And so that's been so much fun to share everything from like my first guest for season two was a death doula. And you're probably like, what's a doula or what's a death doula? So for women who are pregnant and they're going to be giving birth, some of them hire a doula and it's a coach. So it's basically somebody on the sidelines that can coach you through the process. A death doula is similar. They're helping coach people who are going to be making that transition. Maybe they're cancer patients, et cetera. And Neil, you might be going here over here, like, what does that have to do with corporate America leadership? Like, that doesn't make any sense, right? Well, because you have to start understanding all of your people, right? And what they're bringing to the table. And so it gives you some insight of maybe they're dealing with an aging parent. Maybe they're dealing with, you know, a spouse that has a terminal illness. That's, you know, that death doula gives you a perspective of things, right? Things that maybe you could think about or things that you can help understand a little bit better what that person on your team is going through.
Okay. Death doula. You learn something yeah. new every
I know,
day.
Completely random, right?
Yeah. Never heard that term before ever. Yeah, I certainly knew about the one with pregnant women, but man, so that's like at the beginning and then at the end.
At the end.
Wow.
Yeah, I mean, both are a transition, right? And so I just thought it was a really cool way to start season two as something completely different. And, you know, but then there's also guests who are going to talk more about your, you know, your IQ versus your EQ. So your emotional intelligence versus just being intelligent, right? And as you know, an engineer, right? We lean into the data, we lean into that whole aspect, but you need to have the emotional quotient as well, right? So that, you know, it's having these guests that have this broad spectrum of perspective, I think really helps new leaders continue to grow.
I fully agree with you, Mariana. In fact, when you were speaking, it reminded me of an acquaintance I have who works, or at least she used to work as a software engineer. And I worked in medical devices, so that's quite different than in the tech industry. And she said that amongst the engineers, there's a term called RTFM. Have you ever heard of it?
No, I have not.
Yeah, so it stands for Read the Effing Manual. So apparently they would say this to each other whenever someone would ask a question they thought was a stupid question. So when you were mentioning EQ, apparently they don't have any.
Yeah, those are my kind of people, you know what I mean? Like,
yeah, I guess I don't know. I'm just thinking to myself, if someone ever were to tell me that, it's like, no, we got square up now. you have to catch hands now. What do you mean?
Well, you remember the easy button, like the advertisement with the easy button?
Yeah,
do you remember that one?
Yeah,
so I used to have a bullshit button and I would bring it to meetings. And anybody at the meeting could press the button of, like, if you really thought somebody else was BSing you. You know, and sometimes having a little bit of humor like that can go a long way.
Yeah, so hopefully those people were laughing when they were told RTFM.
Yes.
Because if not, then it might be a problem. So I also mentioned that you have a book. So perhaps you could tell us about your book. What was the motivation for writing it and what you hope people take away from that?
So I love a good theme. So the book is also called Might in Motion. Makes it really simple for people to remember. And the goal of the book was to take my weekly writings. I had already done a weekly blog for over a year, and I wanted to convert that into something a little bit more, right? And the book is really a set of challenges, all broken out into those four pillars that we talked about earlier, right? Motivation, momentum, mindfulness, and might. And so you could pick up the book and go really to any chapter if you're like, you know, Neil, you're like, oh, I'm struggling with my motivation this week. Cool. Flip to the motivation section, pick a chapter, it's a really short chapter, read it, and then do the activity, right? So it's all about giving people tangible things that they can go and do to really try to improve that area of their life. I didn't want it to be like this book where you had to read it literally from cover to cover. You can actually go in and dive into the section that you need when you need it.
Yeah, I like those type of books because I don't like to read.
Well, then this one is the one for you.
Oh, man. You know, every time I'm like, sometimes when I'm a guest on a podcast and, you know, I don't typically know the questions beforehand. In fact, I don't typically want to know the questions. Just ask me whatever question you're going to ask me. But whenever you ask me for my favorite book, I always give the same one because there's not a whole lot to pick from.
Now you have a new one. Feel free.
All right. Absolutely. So, you know, Mariana, when I started this podcast, it had all to do with my own struggles giving presentations back when I worked in medical devices as an engineer and noticing a lot of the other engineers not being all that much better at it than I was. I had to give presentations in front of management, a lot of these non-technical decision makers, and I pretty much wet the bed damn near the first few ones that I gave, but I certainly learned my lesson eventually. So when it comes to speaking in front of people, public speaking generally, is that something you've always been good at? And if not, what'd you do to get better at it?
I've always loved being on stage. So that makes me a little bit unique from an engineer perspective, but I spent a lot of my childhood doing community theater, being a reader at church, you know, any opportunity where I could be on stage, I wanted it. Right. And that's not something that everybody has. So understanding that, hey, if I ask somebody on my team to present, that might freak them out, right? Like that might put them in a space where they are just, to your point, wetting the bed because they don't even know where to start, right? They don't feel comfortable in that space. And so my recommendation on that is, you know, face the fear, right? So the first way to kind of start working through it is actually approach it maybe in small steps. And that could be presenting to your own team where you already know these five folks, right? You know them, it should be a safer space, and then grow from there. I had somebody that I've been mentoring the past year, and she was in the same boat you are, Neil. She just did not like to be in front of people. And so some of the stuff we worked on was that presenting in a small space, or she would put together the presentation and she'd send it to me first. I was not like, I'm not on our team. I'm completely an independent party, right? She's one of my mentees. And I could say, okay, well, this is confusing. It doesn't stand on its own. Or you know what? This party is really good. So let's lean into that. So find somebody that can help you really be able to hone what you're trying to, the message you're trying to present. I remember when my father retired and he too was an engineer and they did some sort of presentation to send him off. And one of the slides was nothing but, you know, this whole equation, right? Because as engineers, we love putting up the math, right? And it's just like, okay, but that doesn't translate to maybe the decision makers in the room. So it's how do you take that mathematical equation and maybe make it more of an image, because images resonate with people. Words don't necessarily, but the image does, right? We can all distinctly remember our favorite movie. You probably have a ton, right? And you can immediately go to those scenes in your mind and replay them. So how do you create visuals within your presentations? That also helps. It makes it more exciting for you, makes it more exciting for your audience. And then bring along people that maybe can give you some really good feedback afterwards, right? So for me, I struggled with filler words. I was always saying, or like, or, you know, all those filler words. And so I pulled people aside that I trusted. And I just said, hey, will you just write down a little tick every time I said, or every time I said like, so that now, loving data, I now can create a trend. Even if I don't put it in a spreadsheet, I will know, oh, I said 52 times in this one first presentation. But the second one, I got it down to 40. And then I got it down to 30, et cetera, right? So I can start seeing the trend on how I improve. So I do that with people that I mentor now of, let me give you that feedback, right? but I'm also going to give you the data behind the feedback so that they too can improve. One other random thing that can also help people is improv. So if you have the opportunity to go to an improv class and take it, number one, it's super fun. You're going to meet new people. It's a safe space, right, to make mistakes. But it helps you think on your feet, right? There's certain games that you play when you're doing an improv class that will help you navigate, oh, if something goes wrong, if my slides don't work, if this doesn't work, how can I be inventive and be able to actually continue moving with the presentation with some ease?
Those are all good tips. When you were talking, Mariana, it reminded me of my own life. You mentioned doing plays and then reading in church. I also did plays. I also read at church, but I wasn't good at any of it. I only had
but
to
you
do
did it.
Well, I had to do it because my mother said I had to. So much of my life was because I said so. I didn't make a decision until I was 22 years old.
That means you were raised right. And now look at you. You've created your own stage. See? Yeah. So.
Yeah, mom didn't even tell me to do it. I did it myself. Yeah, absolutely. When it comes to the presentations that you do, Mariana, do you have a process for putting them together? And if so, what is it?
That's another really great question. I love this. So it's, you're telling a story. That's the main thing. How do you tell a story? How do you take your, you know, your audience, your listeners through that journey with you, right? So the first, you know, you've got to lay out what the story is, like what's the challenge that our hero is going to have to go through, right? And so, and then it's how does the hero solve the problem? So I know that sounds really, really simple, but it's so true. It's just being able to convey that message of the problem statement. Here's the journey we're going to go after together, and here's what the solution is at the end, right? You are now the magical wizard that shows up to help the hero because the hero is your audience. You want them to feel like they're the hero. And so sometimes that's, you know it just because you're working on a work presentation. You already know what the problem statement is. You can fill in the blanks. Sometimes you don't. So when you don't, it's sit down and brainstorm. Get out a sheet of paper, get up your PowerPoint, whatever works for you, and just start creating or writing and documenting what you think you want that journey to be. And once you start putting it together, then it becomes the edit process, because sometimes we want to share every ounce of information. That may not be helpful depending on your audience, right? Some presentations you do need to, right? They're very technical presentations, right? Sometimes it's, you want to be able to give the highlight reel so that you can A, keep the attention of your audience, and then guide them to what decision you want them to make as quickly as possible. Always, if you have somebody who can review your presentation and give you feedback, it's the same thing as having a guest in the audience that can give you feedback. You want the same thing, right? It's somebody who will look at it and say, oh, you misspelled the word and. Did I? Like, really? I didn't notice that, because you're so into it. But you have somebody who is external, they can say, oh, yeah, you did. You just put A-N. You forgot the D. Spell check didn't catch it. You know, you should probably go fix it. And having that attention to details is also really important as well. So if it's something where you're printing out your presentation and sharing it with your audience, you know, things like page numbers seems really basic, but super helpful, because if you're on slide 10, their page 10, it'd be nice if it matched, right? Because then you can walk people through whatever training you're doing. So I love getting feedback from others before I present as well. So if you have somebody that you could present to, that's awesome. I had one presentation, you're going to love this, Neil. It was in front of, I think, 300 people. I had 2 minutes to give my presentation on a national initiative, right? That was impacting, you know, associates from coast to coast. 2 minutes was no time to get into the nitty gritty, right? There was absolutely no way to get into the technical components of what we were doing at all. That come day of, I'm the last presenter. And guess what? We're over time. So now I don't have 2 minutes. I probably have about a minute and a half, right? But I practiced. I had every day for a few times a day, I practiced my presentation with a stopwatch because I knew how tight that time window was so that I was ready to go. So when I was called to the stage, I knew I could speed up. I knew I could maybe skip over a few things so that I could get it into this really compressed time. And because I already had this cadence, I had, you know, a rhythm to what I was saying, it truly was a mic drop moment at the end where everybody was like, holy cow. They had sat through this long, laborious 3-hour meeting. And then I come up with like, do, 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 this is what we're doing for you. Mic drop. Boom. I got emails from people afterwards. Hey, I want to learn more. Hey, that was super exciting. Really cool stuff. That's awesome. Like, that's what you want. You got to practice, 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 practice.
Yeah, 100%. And kudos to you for using the stopwatch to make sure that you were within time. That's such a pet peeve of mine. When someone has 15 minutes and they go 17, like you didn't practice this to make sure that you were within time, did you? And
no.
And you know what that does? It throws off agendas, but it's also disrespectful to the audience.
I agree. Like, and maybe it's because most of my career has been in transportation. I love starting on time and ending on time, right? Like, it's time is money.
100%. Well, when it comes to presentations that you do, Mariana, do you ever get nervous? And if so, how do you deal with your nerves?
Oh yeah, I get nervous every time. Right? The key is to, I try to think of it as excitement, not nervousness, because they both feel the same, right? That little, those butterflies in your body, in your stomach or whatever, is the same thing with fear as it is with excitement. So I just try to change the word, right? And tell myself, I'm excited to be here instead of I'm nervous to be here. And that's been a big game changer for me. And I've heard other people do things like they'll go and they'll do the Superman pose, right? They'll put their fists on their hips and they'll look in the mirror, and it's just a very powerful pose, right? And so you go and you see yourself in that power pose versus, you know, being, you know, kind of withdrawn and whatnot, right? And you can do that on your own. You don't have to do it around other people, but that's something that I know has helped other people as well.
Yeah, excited, not nervous. See, as a positive, not a negative. I think that's best. I mean, if you tell yourself you're going to wet the bed, then you know, you're more likely to do so. But you tell yourself, you know, I'm going to do well, and you're more likely to do so. You know, to see, it's
that
positive,
is so true. Like, your words have power, right? And so you just change the word, one word. It's amazing how much it changes your mindset going into a situation.
100%. This has been a great conversation, Mariana. Thank you so much for being a guest. How can people get in touch with you?
So the best way, I'm really active on LinkedIn, but you can go to mightinmotion.com, and on that website it has links to all my socials. So Instagram, LinkedIn, Facebook, all the things. There's also a link there if you want to drop me an email directly. If you DM me on any of those platforms, I will reply. I am a real person. It's not a bot replying to you. So please feel free to reach out.
Wonderful. Well, everyone, that marks the end of another edition of Teach the Geek Interviews. My name is Neil Thompson. I'm the founder of Teach the Geek. I work with technical professionals so they can present more effectively, especially in front of non-technical audiences. And you can learn more about that at teachthegeek.com. Again, that's teachthegeek.com. Until next time, take care and stay safe. Thanks, Mariana.
Thank you.
Well, everyone, that marks another episode in the can. I hope you enjoyed it. If you like these episodes and want to support Teach the Geek, please subscribe, share, and like on any of your favorite podcast platforms. Or on all of them. Also, if you prefer to watch the episodes, head on over to the YouTube channel at youtube.teachthegeek.com. Until next time.